Breaking the Panel is made possible by you and other listeners just as awesome as you are. If you want to support the show and get a little something in return, just go to patreon.com/breakingthepanel. Because we do appreciate the help.
All I hear is waka, 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 waka. It's all.
Oh, yeah, me too. Because, you know, it's Marvel being Pac-Man on the movie money and just gobbling it all up. And DC's like, oh, man, I wish I could get a cherry.
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comics life. We're breaking the panel.
And welcome to Breaking the Panel, your source for everything that is awesome and good in this world. It is all about comic books and the happy, 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 joy, joy, joy stuff that we have. I am the Rock Out of Podcasting, Charles McFall, and tonight we are doing the spoiler-free and the spoiler-filled panel for Spider-Man. I forgot what we're talking about, guys. We've been sitting here for so long waiting on Chris, waiting on that diva. He comes back, everybody's like, yay, Chris is back. He's like, all right, give me my green M&Ms, I'll show up when I can. How you doing tonight, Chris?
I'm doing good. Can't wait to talk about some Homecoming.
Yeah, man, there's some great stuff to it. Klotz is with us. Paul Klotz, the founding father of this show, because I think this was your original idea, sir. And if not, it is now. Paul Klotz.
Hey, what's up?
Oh, good. We got three words instead of just one. I'll find the right intro that'll make you go, oh, gee, golly. I'm here. I don't know what you'd say. And MCU Cast is in the house. We got Jeff Randall.
Oh, gee whiz. Thanks for having me on, guys. I'm real, real excited for this.
Jason Goss was going to be in tonight for DC on Screen, but last minute family stuff came up for him. And those idiots over at Botch decided to record on the same night we record. So, you know.
You mean the same night they always record?
Yeah, you know, you can phrase it however you want. I'm just saying. It's all about spin, man. And
I'm not disagreeing with them being idiots over at Botch.
I mean, I have to abstain.
Courteously.
Of course.
You'll get kicked out of the clubhouse if you agree with us.
No, I just became their top Patreon, and I don't want to say that they're idiots and then be their top Patreon.
No, that's what gives you the right to call them idiots.
But then I'm paying the most for it.
Except that you just said the words that they are idiots, and now we have the power to edit it.
So that's all right. They already know that I think that.
it's not like they give you anything other than love. They speak highly of you all the time.
All the time, I know.
All the time. And one last one. Travis Jones was going to be here tonight, and he remembered that we record on Wednesday nights. But of course, we bumped it not that long ago because of things I've got going on. To Tuesdays, and so he's at the firehouse tonight and can't be here.
Oh, so it's your fault.
Oh, it's always my fault. Everything's about me. Have you not ever listened to this show?
Nah, not even when I'm on it.
Well, we do things by the numbers, and actually, before I do the box office numbers, Jeff, do you have those other numbers you were texting me handy? Because that was really cool information.
What other numbers? Our download numbers?
Oh, I thought, see, that's why I even texted you back. I thought you said that was like torrent numbers, like you were saying Spider-Man torrent numbers were those.
No.
Oh, well, never mind. Okay, so here's what I thought. I thought, oh, Jeff did the deep cut. He went to see how many people downloaded this movie, pirated it, to compare it to box office numbers. And no, he's talking about the MCU Cast numbers. Oh, well.
So doesn't that make those numbers probably more impressive? Because you thought those were Spider-Man numbers and they're his podcast numbers?
You're welcome.
maybe so. Well, here's the numbers by the book on Box Office Mojo. This movie was made for $175 million. It has so far as of July 9th hit $117 million domestic, $139 million foreign, which brings it to a total of $256 million for opening weekend. It was the number one movie this weekend for theaters. Let's go with our take. Oh, wait, no, I got one more. Sorry, I got one more interesting thing. Of the Spider-Man films, I thought, oh, this is interesting. It's dead last, except it's just all-time gross. I'm like, oh, duh, you can't do that. It is second, though. It is second in opening only to Spider-Man 3, the worst of all Spider-Men, I think.
Well, it had all that drive behind the first two movies go into it. Like, same way that Batman vs. Superman had a huge opening weekend and then fell off. It's all about that hype.
Yeah, well, yeah, Spider-Man 3 was God, it was my hope for it. Had Venom, it had Sandman, and it just had craps what it had. But this Spider-Man was Spider-Man. I like Spider-Man. He was cool. All right, Jeff, you being the resident MCU cast / MCU focused person, what's your non-spoilery take on this movie?
Ooh, okay. Well, this movie had the best representation of Peter Parker that I've ever seen. It had the best representation of Spider-Man that I've ever seen. It meshed the two of them beautifully. And it had the best villain in a solo movie that I've ever seen, not just MCU, but like hands down ever. The best solo villain, just Adrian Toomes. Michael Keaton's portrayal of Adrian Toomes was remarkable. It was so much so that I had legit stress and tension and fear for the character when the big twist happened. I stopped breathing. I was like, oh my God, and like I noticed, sorry, what?
That's just the steroids kicking in, man. You gotta get off them roids, boy.
Nah, man, that's they make me angry. No. No, there was a point where I noticed that I was squeezing my girlfriend's hand like way too tight, and I was like, I'm about to crush her hand because this movie is so damn stressful. Like, I've gotta stop. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, that's I hold hands with my wife or put my hand on her leg, and I found myself in some of the latter action scenes, like flinching and moving like you kind of do with a video game. You know, you turn your controller a little bit. I'm like, all right, I'll get off of you, Doc, because I know I'm bugging you. Klotz, you saw it, and what did you think?
I agree with a lot of what Jeff just said. I mean, it is I think To expand a little bit, I do think that Tobey Maguire was a fine Peter Parker, but I do feel like that Spider-Man was a little lacking in the punchiness that we expect out of Spider-Man as far as the quips and everything. I'm going to take some flack here. Hold on, let me put my bulletproof vest on.
Chris, interrupt him now.
I didn't hate Andrew Garfield as Parker, but I can see that it's a completely different take on Parker. This one is the most true to the source, and I appreciated that. Tom Holland's enthusiasm is infectious. Like his, you can tell that he loves the character and that he just embraces it. It might just be him, as far as we can tell, because he's just like, he's awesome. Really great portrayal. Overall, I think the you know what, if I can call it out, the single best thing that this film did compared to all the other Spider-Man films is it focused on one villain.
Yeah.
With a sidekick / secondary villain that we can see more of. Yeah.
But the sidekick / secondary villain was not a whole like act unto himself.
It totally played in like it should. Rogues Gallery.
Exactly. Rogues Gallery. He was a henchman, but we were really facing one guy, you know, who was the mastermind of his little thing. I loved their angle on it, like what they were doing. And I'm very much avoiding spoilers here. I loved the, you know, the blue collar origin and everything, like the what drove them to become, you know, at odds with what is right with the world, apparently.
Yeah, it makes you identify with that character a lot more. Like, when you can understand the villain's point of view, it makes that villain so much stronger.
Yeah. And it wasn't ham-fisted either. You know, it wasn't like a hollow justification for why the character breaks the law. It's legitimate, you know, this guy.
And they stuck with it the entire time.
Yep.
It was, yes, Klotz, absolutely.
Yeah, that was his goal up until the very end, until he was apprehended. That was his goal. Was that way that he was breaking the law. He was just like, I'm just going to get this, and I'm going to go.
Yep. And, so, like, I really dug that, and I don't want to get into any more on I do want to touch back on that after we get into the spoilers, because there's some nuance to it that I really wanted to highlight, but I just loved it. Michael Keaton, thank you, Keaton, for returning to comic films. And, you know, I've heard people say that Michael Keaton's acting didn't really survive the 90s, if you will, like his style and everything. I've seen him in a few things here and there I thought he was fine in. He nailed it here.
Yeah.
Like, he had all the gravitas that I wanted out of Toomes. He had Oh, man, it was just like...
Well, I think what you're getting with there is that he was, in the 80s and 90s, he was that everyman, right? And he mm-hmm. did some interesting stuff.
He was kind of hokey. You know what I mean?
There was some of that. Mr. Mom is perfect, right? You could identify him with him at that time. I think that's why he was perfect here, is you could easily identify him without being hokey, without writing stupid one-liners for him or bad moments. He was the guy sitting next to you in the theater, really, if you really want to think about it. Somebody put in a hard situation doing what they felt like they needed to do to get back at the man for screwing him over.
Yep.
Chris, what you got?
Well, first, I'll go ahead and take some of those bullets for Paulie, because I agree 100%. I thought initially that Tobey Maguire was hands down the best Spider-Man that there would ever be when I first saw the movie. My only critique to Tobey Maguire in those movies is the same critique I have in every Tobey Maguire movie, is his inability to emote properly. and that's where I thought Andrew Garfield came along. And when I saw Amazing Spider-Man, I was like, nope, I was wrong. I was like, he's second fiddle now. But Tom Holland is Peter Parker persona. It's incredible, and I think it's just his love of the character, his having fun with it, as well as the people behind the computers that are typing out these scripts. I mean, once again, it's a studio paying attention to character, being true to source material, crafting new stories while being true to source material is the thing. I don't know that we're gonna get a better portrayal of Spider-Man and I don't know that we need one. This is just so good. And for once, I finally believe that he's a younger hero. I'm not looking at a 30-year-old guy that's trying to tell me that. Yeah.
Well, how old is Holland?
He was 20
or 21.
He was 20 when they recorded.
He's not that far off from the age of the character, and his face does play young. He can absolutely. He's very, like you said, he's very believable.
Yeah.
Well, he's so young, they're going to keep him in high school, which, I mean, is so true to Peter Parker. Like, from the comic books, he was in high school forever. Mm-hmm. And because he's so young, they can keep him there. Like, the older guys, Toby and Andrew, they had to get him out of high school and, like, into the real world by the end of the first movie. And that really, you feel like you lost some of that character development and that hero building from those, because they montage through it. And then in this movie, it's just like, we get to grow up with him. We get to grow as a hero with him.
Well, I will say, because I was introduced to those characters at their age in high school, when they were doing the whole college and real world, I'm like, you're too young for that. I mean, I didn't have that flip side. I didn't think I was watching, well, okay, with Andrew Garfield, I definitely thought I was watching an older person play high school. It felt like Dawson's Creek to me, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, really, Pacey, you're not 40 and you're playing 18? Okay. And he just has an old face, but that's neither here nor there. But, yeah, in the first set of movies, it's like, You shouldn't get paid for that. You're like not of legal age to get. It was just a break for me. But Tom Holland, absolutely. Here's my number one love of this film. Absolute zero whining. There was no, I got homework. I'm a kid. None of that. And yeah, I was so happy.
That's very true. There was really very little angst. Like,
only real angst, right? He accepted his genius. He accepted his desire to be a hero, but he also was a teenager and wanted to be part of that party. And, you know, that's the only real angst, right? It was a real dilemma for somebody in his position.
Basically, I felt like this Peter isn't super introspective, because he's just very sure of himself. Like, he knows who he is, and he knows who he wants to be. He wants, you know, without giving too much away, it's pretty clear from Civil War, he wants to be an Avenger. You know, he wants to be a hero. He wants to help people. And that's what drives his character, and he has no dilemma about that. The only, if anything, the biggest dilemma he faces in this film is that he's trying to run before he can walk. And
that's protocols, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, it's he's just, the biggest dilemma he's faced with on a personal level is that he's a teenager who's got the ability to affect the outcome of important stuff, and he just doesn't have the, you know, the life experience, the emotional maturity, all this other stuff yet to fully grasp what he's engaged in, but he's still fully committed to it and still trying to do the best that he can. And that's what I really loved about this. And, you know, one other side thing we're still dodging spoilers here. I think a nice part about this film was that the Osbournes weren't involved. And yes. I feel like the Osbournes in the previous two iterations really muddied the waters and made things very... Things were less black and white and much more gray, if you get what I mean, because yeah. things were so... He was so entwined in what was going on with them, but also, you know...
What are you... Sorry, so I was laughing because you said that they were much less black and white, and I was like, and a whole lot less green.
Yeah. And, you know, see, and that's the thing, is like, the Osbournes and the Green Goblin storyline is great and has a lot of potential, but it's very dark. You know, it explores the darker aspects of like, human existence and our psyche and everything, and... I think that can taint what they're trying to establish with a teenage Spider-Man. You know what I mean? Teenage Spider-Man's kind of happy-go-lucky. I mean, like, as you can see from the trailer, he's worried about girls. He's worried about kind of fitting in at school, but he kind of doesn't care. And he's trying to juggle his, you know, superhero side job with just making it through high school. And that was all prevalent in this film and yes. didn't feel forced. And that's what I really liked about it.
Yeah, yeah. For me, though... I'm still not a huge fan of Spider-Man. I think this is the best Spider-Man, for sure. I've loved the inclusion of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I felt the story writing was great. I wish they'd started with the Spider-Man instead of having the five before it. But as far as like Marvel franchises go, it's still probably on the bottom of my personal favorite list. But overall, the acting, man. Tony Stark, Robert Downey Jr., he brought it with that scene on after the ferry. He brought his A game, and it was amazing. You know, I thought all the main actors were really strong in this film.
Sure.
So, does anybody got anything else they want to say non-spoilery? Obviously, go see it. It's got a lot of great ones. My wife said it's probably her favorite Spider-Man ever. She did wish that they explained that he was 15, you know, earlier in the film. That was kind of a shock to her when they brought that out halfway through the film. She was never a big reader of Spider-Man. All her own exposure has been the movies. And again, the movies either play them older or just seem older, period. So, and then the special school. She didn't realize he was at a special school, high school, until mm-hmm. they brought it out later. And then you kind of see the full title later. Because, again, it's not a comic book fan. Is there anything you guys hated? Before we get into the spoilers, anything that you wish they could have fixed, or does all that need to go in the spoiler section?
Not enough dubstep.
I agree, sir. Always not enough dubstep.
No, I'm kidding. I think that's probably... Again, this isn't spoilers, so it's probably one of the most obvious things is that they didn't really try to force any, like... You know, like...
Anything?
Pop culture...
Yeah.
The worst offense, the closest thing to an offense that they came to with that is that he was kind of vlogging in the beginning.
Yeah.
But teenagers do that. Like, especially teenagers in today's world, they record themselves doing stuff all the time.
Yeah, and that just served to modernize it a little bit.
Right.
That line from Happy, you know, nobody can see that, right? Well, yeah. Then why are you talking in that dumb voice?
Because it's fun for me.
It's fun.
Yeah.
That to me, that just served to further drive in how young he actually is. Mm-hmm. Because, like, you know, older people don't talk in a funny voice just to amuse themselves. I mean, I do, but that's, you know, I'm weird. But most people don't talk in a weird voice just to amuse themselves in a video.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun. Chris, do you have anything you want to get into? Or, sorry, Klotz, sound like you might be saying
no,
something.
No, Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, we cut Chris off pretty hard earlier.
Yeah, proceed.
All I was going to say is that the final word on whether you should see this or not is, of course, Rotten Tomatoes, which scores it with a 93% rated fresh.
Nice.
And we all know that that is the most important verdict.
I'm going to boot you. I am booting you from this conversation.
You said you don't like Spider-Man.
I don't, but I still thought it was a great film and everybody should go watch it.
Fine.
I'm not a fan. I liked the movie. Let me be clear. I enjoyed the movie. It's a very strong film in the Marvel Universe. It was a Spider-Man we needed. I'm just not a huge fan. I can't identify. I've never identified. Even when I was 15, I did not identify with a 15-year-old kid in a movie. I just never have. So I have a hard time relating to it, as whereas I could see Ant-Man and go, no, I could see myself going to jail or prison for some of the stupid crap I've done. So I can identify with him. You know, I'm not like a genius cat burglar or anything, but I can identify with a man who gets giant. I'm just saying.
And I think that's a clear and important distinction in this day and age of everybody reviews everything. And I think a little too harshly at times. Mm-hmm. Where you don't necessarily have to be able to identify with a character. Like Charles said, he doesn't identify with Spider-Man. Spider-Man's not his favorite character. But that doesn't stop him from extolling the virtues of this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, he can be impartial enough to say, this is a good movie, you should go see it. Even though I didn't identify with the character, I never have, this is still a good movie. And I hear too many people that they get hung up in, they can't identify with the character in the comics, so they go in thinking they can't identify with the character on the movie, and they don't look at the movie objectively enough to say whether or not this is a good movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, come for the MCU Spider-Man, stay for the teen comedy.
I was a little disappointed with the second act of the film. I was expecting a little more of Can't Hardly Wait, which I absolutely loved that film. I know it's a niche 90s film, but it was I don't know. It just didn't hit all the notes for me. But again, I still think it's worth watch. I very much enjoyed watching it. And when we get into spoilers, I'll tell you what I loved and what I hated. But if anybody else, and we can do that now, unless anybody else has got one more thing they want to say.
Hot Aunt May. Let's move on.
that was a fun running joke. Hmm. All right. So stay tuned after the break. We're going to come back with the spoilers part of this film. Absolutely go see it, then come back and listen to the rest of this show and stick around. All right, we're back with the spoilers. Everything after this point is going to be spoiler filled. We're going to talk about the things we loved, the things we hated, the story twists, the predictions for what's coming next, everything. And I want to lead with, thank God they finally not only did what Jeff said and what Klotz said about having a really strong villain, they finally had not one but two great villains that they did not throw away. We can use them again, and it'll be okay. And I'm so excited.
He didn't die.
He did not. Neither one of them died.
Well, three, and technically four.
Who's the third?
Because you got Tinker,
Scorpion, and then Tinker's number four.
Okay. So I didn't recognize Scorpion because I wasn't that day. I thought he had to be somebody. I figured a tattoo was something.
Oh, man, no. When they said Matt Gargan, I was just like, no!
So there's that. So I knew that was probably a deep cut. And then Tinker, I'm unfamiliar with. And I'm assuming that's the guy who obviously built everything for Vulture.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. What about, was there anything with... God, I always wanted to just call him Miles Morales.
Yes.
Okay, what's
That's his uncle. That's his uncle.
Yeah, Aaron Davis, the character that... oh, shit. Donald Glover, that's his name. Donald Glover was playing is Aaron Davis, who is the uncle of Miles Morales. He even said, I have a nephew that lives around here. And we were like, oh, my God! Yeah. And then Kevin Feige said in an interview at one point that Miles Morales is in this universe. He's somewhere out there.
Nice. I was hoping... And I knew I didn't know enough about the film or about the universe to catch. Because if they say a character's name, that's technically he's just a side character, right? So if they said his name, then it had to be something. And that's what I was hoping you guys would educate me on. But yeah, we have villains that will come back. This is truly a first in the MCU. And I'm very excited about that.
Oh, it was whenever they showed Adrian Toomes like being saved from the fire by Peter, I was like, oh my God, that's his thing since the beginning of this freaking movie. Like, even in Civil War, like, from the beginning, it's he wants to help people no matter how bad they are. He wants to save them. So like, even this guy who has been trying to kill him, he's trying to save him. He even says, I'm trying to save you. And then he, like, pulls him out of the fire just so that he can incarcerate him, knowing what that'll do to Liz Allen. Those are the decisions that he makes. And, this movie affected me emotionally. Every decision that Peter Parker made, I felt for him. I was like, God, Peter, can't you just once go be a 15-year-old and just have, like, grow up, man? Like, have fun growing up instead of all at once. Like, just slow down, please.
You know... The other great thing about that, on the flip side, is that, you know, Vulture Tombs is not one-dimensional. Mm-mm. You know what I mean?
Like, no.
We see at the end of the film, you know...
Oh, God.
Okay, so the cat's out of the bag. If you've seen the film, we're in the spoiler section. He figures out who Parker is, or who Spider-Man is, and that it's Parker. And this is, like, to my knowledge, that was, like, the fastest that that's ever happened, right?
Yeah.
Like, that was, like, bam.
But
like,
it makes
right
so much sense, because he's a smart guy.
Well, he's a smart guy, and Peter never shuts up.
Yeah.
So, of course, he's going to recognize his voice.
And he's Batman.
That's fair.
So,
well, and what I was going to say is, you know, he wasn't out to kill people. Mm-mm. He was out to steal shit, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and even that first death. Yeah.
Well, yeah, yeah. That was great. I was like, wow, they're making him, like, hardcore. And then he's like,
I thought that was the anti-grav gun.
Yeah. And I was like, and it was so, like, true to, like, to blue collar guys like that, you know, like I've grown up with some of them and you know, worked with them and stuff in the past. Something like that happens and they're just like, huh. And they move on.
Yeah. Like, well, damn. All right.
And I don't want to derail you, Paul. I just want to say, I mean, that's a good example of a guy that's just that right then and there, that's when that happens, where he's in over his head. And he, mm-hmm. you're at that point where you can either get off or keep going on the same track. And he sticks to it. He owned it, and he was like, yep, that was like shanking the guy the first day in prison. I didn't know he was going to die, but I'm going to go with it.
Yeah.
Yep. Dude, now, double down for sure.
Let's go back to the creation of this character in the movie sense. I got to say, you know, back when, what's his name that did the director that did the first couple of Spider-Men, when he said that he wanted Vulture, I was like, all I've ever seen in the comics is this old guy who got pushed out of Oscorp because of whatever reasons. He was too old to work, whatever. And he's like, hey, I'm getting my revenge. I thought it was the dumbest freaking villain. But what they did here is it's so cool. They took us back to the first Avengers movie, right? And they're doing the salvage, and there's that I don't even know what it's called, but there's that freaking flying space dragon worm armored thing
they call it a Leviathan.
Yeah,
and they're doing things and they're salvaging it. And did you all geek out on damage control?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I hit my wife like, oh my god, damage control! It's its own thing. It's really awesome. It's so cool. And
I'm
that
still
was
mad really they haven't brought that to series like they promised us they would. Mm-hmm.
I know. Maybe they will. Maybe at some point.
Like maybe this is the push that we need.
But yeah, damage control was, and he's like, no, I, and this is a real life thing. You see it all the time. I'm watching a TV show about repossessions in England, and it's about people who just get behind on stuff. And you see, it's like this guy, like the Vulture, where he got a job, and they pay on milestones, but they promise him all this money, and so he invests in new equipment and a bigger crew and this and that, and then the money is gone. And all of a sudden, you're left holding the bag. And his whole thing was taking care of my people, taking care of my family. And if you can't identify with that, you probably aren't going to like this film.
You're not a real person if you can't identify with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I loved, oh, that's the Avengers movie. And then we'll come back to Tombs in a second, but I did love that, what we're talking about, the vlog with Peter.
A film by Peter Parker. I love that it opens with that text, a film by Peter Parker. I was like, what the hell are they doing? Is this going to be like one camera shot the entire time?
I was really worried that it was going to be like found footage the entire time.
Oh, no. That was going to
be
so
like
bad.
Chronicle.
Oh.
That would have been so bad. That is not the MCU movie.
Cloverfield.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a place for that kind of storytelling, but not in the MCU, I don't think. But you get to see all this extra stuff from his point of view dealing with Civil War. And I thought that was a really cool catching everybody up, see how this ties in, it all plays, and now let's
go. And it fills in a lot of gaps that we had, which is like, okay, so we get, you know, Queens, Tony Stark goes, he talks to Kid, like, next scene, they're in Germany, and Kid has a new suit. Like, whoa, did he fit him at all? Did he measure him, like, on the way? Were they on the plane with a tape measure and then just, like, kind of had Jarvis or Friday, like, working a suit out for him, kind of, and then, like, he fits into that. Like, how did this suit happen? And then in this movie, they're just like, let's fill in all those little blanks, and, you know, we see him in his goofy suit, and Happy's like, what are you doing? Like, where's the suit? And he's like, this is my suit. And then he's like, didn't you check on the table? He's like, I have a table? And he's like, oh my god, you guys, my room is so much bigger than I thought.
Yeah. Like, this is the closet. But yeah, that the tomb scene where it's just him making ends meet and taking the scraps, if you will, and then turning around selling it for where he can sell it. That dude, this is probably one of my favorite villains so far in the MCU, because not only did, like you said, Jeff, I felt things. I was, God, that speech at the end where he comes up to him is like, you know, in the warehouse, and he's, I just want you to understand. And he's just being a human being. And it makes it that gray area, right? Of, yeah. He goes, why no silicone cuts the bad guys is wrong? He's like, kid, you just don't understand the way the world works.
Like, if things fell hard on me and I was in his position, I'm not sure that I would make different decisions. Like, I might pick up a different gun when I'm telling somebody not to talk. But, like, I could see everything from his perspective. I was like, God, man, I just, if, you know, one different decision, and that's me.
Well, and that's, I think that's where Marvel has heard people talking about disposable villains and not fleshed out villains, and they gave us one. I mean, every time that they've given us a good, I mean, Loki is another good example. Not only is he one that they gave some time and some fleshing out to, but his motivation at the end of the day, it's sibling rivalry and, you know, looking for that approval from your father or the love of your parents. And the lashing out when you don't get it. So if you're an older sibling like me, you're like, good lord, I'm so tired of this story. Because I have younger siblings that play it out every day of my life. But, I mean, if... Exactly. But if you're, you know, if you're a younger sibling, or, I mean, if you have any kind of empathy, it's not that far of a stretch to see how his motivations have affected his judgment. This one's very the same. I have no problem with Zemo in Civil War. I thought his motivations were there, and I liked that he essentially defeated the Avengers with his planning and not with his fists. But Keaton, what they did here, and back to the Green Goblin point earlier, is they showed that they don't need him. Like, anytime you think Superman, that's your go-to arch-villain, that's why they've done it twice now. Is they're like, oh, we got to get Green Goblin in there because we got to put butts in seats, and Keaton and those writers just showed you don't need. I would be happy if they did five movies in this franchise and I never saw Green Goblin.
I don't know,
as long
man.
As I get more Vulture.
I don't want Green Goblin.
I don't need him.
If Norman Osborn was the buyer for Stark Tower, that would be mind blowing. Because then okay, so you guys, if you've listened to the MCU cast at all, you know that I've been nursing a theory for a long time that they're going for Dark Reign and the Dark Avengers, and then maybe eventually Siege. So if Norman Osborn is buying Stark Tower at the end of this movie, then that so much easier gets him the ability to take Dark Avengers and put them in that tower, because he owns that building. And like, sorry.
Yeah. But then you just because you have Osborn, you still don't necessarily need Green Goblin. You can still have him in Avengers Tower and still be Iron Patriot and never even touch the Green Goblin storyline.
And you could bring in Green Goblin after the fact, and like he has the Iron Patriot suit, and he's like, you know what, I want to get back to that. This is the way that I do that, and he makes himself into the Green Goblin. Like, easy origin story right there.
I disagree, because the way Siege even breaks down is Harry is always struggling with that voice in his head. Even when he seems normal and he is leading the whole basically anti-hero charge and doing the Dark Reign, he still has that voice in his head. They have to struggle
with. Yeah, but we don't need to see him be a villain for him to have that voice in his head, though.
Yeah.
Like, we just need him to exist. Maybe. And he can be going, like, he can be... I mean, it can be Loki could be that voice in his head, in that descent into madness. Yeah. Because, I mean, that's who it was that drew him to go attack Asgard. But, like, having him... Think about him having this slow spiral into madness over the course of an entire phase of the MCU, like phase four, having him go through that descent into madness, into Siege being like the ultimate, you know, for that. It would, I could talk for hours about this theory.
I get that. Klotz, give some deep thoughts on Tombs, man. What hit you? What'd you love? What'd you hate?
Oh, I'm pretty sure I started this whole conversation with
you. Pretty much did, but I just wanted you to finish it. Maybe take it somewhere
just,
else.
I love that the characterization was real. I love that he had the blue collar motivation. He's just trying to take care of his family. He's not setting out to really hurt people, because I mean that's ultimately initially he's just a thief. Even to the end, like even with the, you know, the third act scene with the Stark plane. He's just trying to steal the stuff. He's not trying to kill anybody, blow everything up. You know, he's not a terrorist or anything like that. He's just trying to get the stuff to make the money, to take care of himself and his family and everybody who works for him. And I appreciated that. And then, you know, he finds out that Peter is Spider-Man, and he gives him a chance. Like, I mean, it's still a villain chance, you know what I mean? It's not like, he's not a total bro, but like, he's like, you know, you can walk away and just let this happen. And
don't interfere with my operation anymore, or I will kill you. Like, he's not obsessing over, he's not the Lex Luthor. Mm-hmm. He's not obsessing over this superpowered person, like, to the point to where, like, I need to kill him, and then I'll get back to my thing. It's like, no, let me just work around him.
And I'm going to get a little meta on you here, but, like, think about it from his perspective. He just found out that the guy that's been foiling his plans is a 15-year-old kid.
Yeah.
So on one hand, he's probably thinking like, all right, well, because we didn't know anything, he had the upper hand on us, but now that's not the case anymore, so this shouldn't be a big deal. And like, he even, he makes the chess move to outsmart him by posting Shocker at the back door. And like, basically, yeah, he's like, I'm unconcerned, but I'm going to take precautions. It leads to his downfall in this film. But, you know, all through the whole time, he seems to be very cognizant of the fact that Peter's a 15-year-old kid. You know what I mean? And even at the end, you know, he gets beaten by him. And, you know, he's in prison. He could just let the name slip. You know what I mean? He could just put it out there. And he doesn't. And, you know, maybe it's because he wants to take care of it himself. A very understandable perspective. Maybe it's because he doesn't want to see somebody do something stupid, like try to kill Peter or Aunt May or whatever, just because, you know, he got the best of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a very adult position to be in and realize that this is a kid. The kid beat you at your game. You know, he ruined your plans. He's, you know, putting your family in a rough spot and everything, but he's still a 15-year-old kid. And this guy has a 17-year-old kid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And close enough, right?
You know, that is not gone from his character.
And sorry to interrupt, but Peter earned his trust, not trust, his light. You know, he says that. He's like, man, we walked to my house. I didn't get it, but I get it. I get it. The grit. I admire your grit. He reminds him of himself a little bit. Plus, mm-hmm. he saved his life when he didn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Do you think that him not saying the name could be him paying him back for saving his life? Like, I understand that you pulled me out of that fire, so I'm not going to tell these people who you are.
That's what I love about that scene. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, that's 1, 2, 3. No, as you said, that's what I love about that scene so much, is the ambiguity of it, because you as the viewer get to decide until they show you on the screen. Until they show you, you get to decide how you're taking that character in that final scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That speech right before he goes into the dance where he says, I know who you are. He's even holding the gun. Right, I know who you are. Just said, you saved my daughter's life. That's not something I could ever forget. So I'm going to save your life tonight. He's already setting up this precedent of give and take. So it quite easily could be the fact that it's Peter saved his life, so he's going to protect him until he can take his life. Maybe even. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't know where the character's going to go from here. Is he going to get darker? Is he going to rehab? Who knows?
Mm-hmm. That super villain, like, villainy thing, even if it's more of a dad thing, but it was like dad as villain kind of line that he gave him, where he was like, I just saved your life, now what do you say? Okay. And I was like, oh my God, know. I would say those words.
Yeah.
That's the thing is, like, we don't know where he's going to go. His decisions are real, you know what I mean? Because one of the things that really drives me crazy about villains a lot of times, especially ones who are supposedly motivated by love of family, is that they go on these homicidal rampages. Very rarely are real people like that. Like, if you're motivated by the love of your family, you might be willing to lie, cheat, and steal to do better by your family, but you're rarely going to be the kind of person who wants to murder kids or, you know, other, like, you know, people who can't protect themselves, all that kind of stuff. You might, like, in a confrontation, end up killing somebody who's challenging you or getting in your way or something like that, but you're probably going to show remorse, you know, all that kind of stuff. And that's who Toombs was to me in this film, is he was someone who was like, I have a goal, you're in the way of my goal, please get out of the way. But, like, he's not, you know, resorting to, like, just nonsense, you know, stuff that doesn't make any sense. His motivations are still clear.
I'm going to draw in this 15-year-old with this masterfully laid trap. Yeah.
I just...
Like, none of that.
Yeah, I just don't feel like he... Yeah,
He wants to kill Peter originally because Peter, without knowing he's Peter, of course, he thinks he's a grown man or whatever, but he wants to kill Spider-Man, I guess I should say, because he's interfering with his number one goal. His number one goal is to take care of his family and his people, right? The people underneath him. Tinker and Shocker and whatever. And with somebody...
I'm the Shocker.
God, that was a great scene with the Shocker number one, which was no Shocker. I was like, seriously? That's Shocker? That's bad. Well, no, he wasn't, right? He was just calling himself that, and then he gets killed, and, of course, by accident, he's like, well, you're the Shocker now. And that character, that Shocker, is good. I mean, Well, you might disagree. I don't know what that L was, if you're agreeing.
Anytime I see Bokeem Woodbine on film, I'm happy. That dude kills every role he's in. I think the first time I remember seeing him was 3,000 Miles to Graceland. And,
horribly great film. I mean, it's just a horribly great film. But, so his whole character was, you know, under the radar. I mean, he's yelling at the quote-unquote Shocker, telling him he's doing the wrong thing, getting, you know, you knew if this is a good movie, and it was, things had to go down, right? Things had to stop, and he was going to be on the Vulture side of it. And it was just... it was great. It was great.
I love that we got to see Herman Schultz, Bokeem Woodbine's character. I like that we got to see growth into the villain part from him. Because, like, he got the gauntlet tossed at him. You're the Shocker now. And he's like, I don't know if I want to do this. Yeah. And then, like, as time goes on, he gets a little more used to it, And then by the end of it, he's just like, yeah, I think I can do this. I think this is cool. I'm going to punch you with a school bus. I think, you know, I'm okay with this. And he becomes that villain, and he's probably going to become more of that villain later. Like, he's not dead. Vulture's not dead. Scorpion's not dead. Tinker is not dead. All of these characters can come back.
As far as we know, Tinker was never arrested.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, because the warehouse was cleared out by the time Spider-Man got there. Yeah. Yeah, and one thing we have failed to mention when we're talking about Spider-Man's villains is his greatest arch nemesis of all time is finally portrayed in movie, and that's what happens when Spider-Man doesn't have buildings. And I loved it.
I was like, Doc Ock? Oh, yeah, gravity.
Yeah.
Oh, gravity is the bitch.
He's got to run. I love it.
Yeah.
All right.
And when he shoots that web out and it just grabs nothing...
And he's just like, oh.
Which, by the way, was at the driving range, and it came after the scene where Ned was like, so how far can you shoot your web? I would just stand on the roof and shoot it as far as I could. And he's like, I caught the irony, and he shot it. And he's like, oh, wait, that's a driving range. He can actually see how far he shot his web.
That was such a, like, just like, oh, yep, this is the way I'm running. Oh, hey. Good opportunity for a field test. Poof.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is his buddy Ned or Ed?
Ned.
Ned Leeds.
Right. I loved Ned. I love the whole guy in the chair. I was like, this is great. I love the when he's ultimately the reason why Peter gets to take out Shocker and everything. Like, it was nice to see. Normally, Spider-Man can be such a solo character, but, like, in this iteration, you know, he comes in as a tag along to the Avengers. So I feel like him having a bit of a support network is a good thing. You know what I mean? And it's really cool how it's playing out. So I enjoyed that. That was fun. And obviously a Lego Death Star is always a good thing too.
Except that they said 3,083 pieces, and that is incorrect. And I knew it as soon as they said it. And it bugged the crap out of me. It's like a 4,000 piece set.
Seriously, Chris, get out. This is
sorry. I look for authenticity, and it wasn't there in that scene.
No, they didn't put the walls on, Chris. So,
oh man. So the one scene that I hated, honestly, was when he tracked him down to the where they're about to hijack the truck convoy. Right, he's out in Maryland. And he's trying to figure out a suit, and we'll talk about the suit and stuff in a second. But the whole scene where he's kind of running around behind, and he has the taser webs, and they shoot it from the car, which is a fun scene in the car. Cause he's like, "Where's the dampeners?" He's learning how to use the shocker fist. He's actually smart, right? Showing his intelligence. He doesn't just run out. But you see Spider-Man doing goofy stuff in the background. Like, it just felt a little Deadpool-y to me, but weak. I didn't care for that scene.
But you didn't like the juxtaposition of that scene? You just said it. You've got the bad guy in the front seat doing the right thing, trying to learn how to use the technology.
I got that.
And you got the dumb kid on the outside just slinging webs.
I didn't like that they kept doing the instant kill mode joke. It didn't ring for me is what I'm saying.
Gotcha.
So the thing is, though, so you brought up something that I've heard somebody else say,
okay,
is that they felt that it was a little Deadpool-y. And I'm going to say what I said to them. I'm going to point out the fact that Deadpool was molded in the image of Spider-Man. Spider-Man had 30 freaking years or more of one-liners and nonsense before Deadpool was even a thing. So, he's old enough to be his daddy.
You know what?
Perpetually 15.
I'm just saying.
In classic Marvel form.
Better. I mean, just because Spider-Man did it first. I mean, Spider-Man does the one-liners.
Well, no.
Every other film before this, I hated him.
But what I'm saying is that, like, that's all of Deadpool's shtick, is he's murdery and it's all jokes all the time.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? I don't like it when someone tries to fault Spider-Man for being Spider-Man, because he is the one-liner king. He was the first. Well, he's arguably often the best.
I like that they played the teenage angle. Maybe I missed that they were doing classic Spider-Man. I don't know. But I did like the angle that he's figuring out. All of a sudden, he has all these options unlocked. He's never used them. He's trying to go through. But at the same time, I didn't mind him going, no instant kill. Oh, taser. Taser web was cool. Rapid fire was interesting. It's like, okay, you know, I get that. It was just him in the background. No, Chris, I understand what you're saying. It was a juxtaposition, but it just didn't work for me, is all I'm saying. Hmm.
Did you ever play any of the Spider-Man video games, Charles?
Yeah.
Like, Rapid Fire was web bullets.
Yeah.
That's classic web bullets. When they were going through that, I was like, I know this! I've played this game!
There's, what, 589 variations that you could put together.
Yeah, something like that.
Which I thought it was great. Babysitting mode was great. Baby monitor mode was great. Training wheels.
The training wheels protocol. Baby monitor mode. Yeah. The baby monitor was where the suit recorded everything for it.
Yeah. What was your Chris? What was your favorite scene in the whole film?
I don't know that I had a favorite scene. I was so hooked from the opening sequence when you blend the MCU music with the Spider-Man music. I knew I was in for a ride. And then there's just the little things throughout the movie, like the Mets hat at his house. Just man, when Spoon is played, the soundtrack was so killer. But like Underdog by Spoon is one of my favorite songs, and when that started playing, and it's the montage for the hapless hero that Spider-Man is, like that whole sequence of him just trying to do what he can to help people out, and it was so lackluster for him. Yeah. And he just, but he didn't stop. He just kept doing his thing. And it culminates with me getting to see him eating with his mask pulled up over his mouth. I just think, and that goes back to one of my complaints about Snyder, is that he seems so intent in his DP portion and capturing the scene to show you this one panel that happened one time in a comic book that the true fans will know and they'll love him for it, versus trying to make it fit organically in a scene like that did. You still get that nostalgia look. You still get that comic book fan cheap pop that everybody knows that's a great scene, just like the original Spider-Man with the upside down kiss. Things like that resonate, but it's not forced and just crammed in there to get the nerd approval.
Which was a great nerd approval scene, though, in the Washington Monument, where Karen's like, go ahead and kiss her. And I'm like, no.
Now's your chance.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Jesus.
Thank you, gravity.
The first time he changed and that rat came flying out of underneath the trash can.
Yeah.
I just like, you're giving me so much little realism in here. Yep, yeah. That's Queens. That's New York right there.
I need a new backpack. The whole dumpster's gone. Oh, man, my backpack's gone. That's five. That's your fifth one. Like, what? You would learn not to tag your backpack to a freaking mobile device, man.
But he was doing it. He was doing it. And that's what I love, because Spider-Man used to, yeah. It
was great.
But I looked at my buddy and I'm like, she's only upset about the backpack as opposed to the five pairs of shoes, five pairs of jeans, and five shirts at least that were in those backpacks.
Right. I love that he took the time to put the suit on, because like normally in all of the other movies you see him like he's wearing the suit under it or something like that, and he like it stops in the alley and you're just like, come on, Kip, just put your arms in it. You got to hurry up, man. People are, they're dying out there. And you are in here changing. Oh my God, this takes so long.
Yeah.
And then like he finally gets it on and presses the button. And then he's like straight up awesome Spider-Man look again. I'm just like, this is, yeah, okay. This is the movie that I've been waiting for. Yeah. This is exactly it. And then I want to say my favorite scene, Charles. My favorite scene is probably nobody else's favorite scene, but I like, in his montage of like, you know, the day to day, like I just got out of school, you know, ready for my next mission, when he shoots the web and then falls flat on his face on the rooftop and like skids across it a little bit.
I'm okay.
And then he just like gets up, brushes himself off. He's like, I'm okay. And like, nobody's looking, nobody cares. But I love that they show him being that unexperienced Spider-Man, that, you know, the low-level hero who hasn't quite gotten to the really big buildings yet, but still is trying to do the thing, and then gravity takes hold, and he hasn't quite adjusted yet. I love that they're showing that growth.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Klotz, what's your favorite?
Oh, man. actually, okay, my favorite scene, ironically enough, is going to be the very last scene when he gets his suit back from Stark. He puts it on, and then Aunt May's in the doorway, and she says, what the?
Yes!
And it blitzkrieg bops you.
The reason that is my favorite scene is because I'm very relieved to see the future of this storyline where she's in on what's going on.
Yeah,
because I know it's a big part of the Spider-Man thing that she doesn't know, but like it's always been implied by different, you know, different writers and stuff that at times she has known and just never said anything. I like the idea that we have a younger, more hip,
more realistic Aunt May.
Beautiful Aunt May. you know,
really. Even with those massive glasses she wore?
Yes.
Yes.
Very much so.
Yes.
there's a type she's playing to, I'm just saying.
Yeah. I am that type. I win.
Yep.
We win. We all win.
When Marissa Tomei's in the movie, we all win.
But, I like the idea that going forward she's going to be, you know, in on what's going on. And I'm sure that'll add its own tensions and you know, everything. But I like that they're going a different direction. They're not going to play the same game that we've played with the previous five films. Let's explore some new territory. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And did you see the that recent news with Marissa Tomei talking about the deleted scene from the movie?
No.
where apparently she saved a young girl. May saves a young girl and goes home and has to basically lie to Peter about it because she's always telling Peter, you know, when there's danger, you run.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. she ran into the danger to save the girl. So she's like, so at that point, it puts my character in a position where he's doing things, where he's going out and saving people and has to lie to me about it. And I come home and now I have to lie to him about what I did. And we both are like, so what did you do today? Oh, nothing really. And they go on and she's like, it would have been... had that been in the movie, it would have added a little more depth to their relationship, and it would have made that final scene a little bit more impactful, she thought.
It turns it into Mr. and Mrs. Parker.
Yeah.
Well, you can't have my favorite scene without Klotz's favorite scene, even though it came a little out of order. My favorite scene was the Iron Spider. Right? When that suit just... Ooh. Oh, it's so gorgeous. Mm-hmm. So there, I'm like... I'm going, yeah. No, he's too young. You can't do Iron Spider yet. Don't, no, I love it. No. And,
put it back, right, put it back.
And then he does the choice, which was great character development. He does the choice, and I love how RDJ plays it. It's like, really? Really? Because you're telling me no. Really? One last chance.
You're turning
3-2-1 No. No? Okay. Happy, you got something to say to him? He's like, yeah, get in the car.
Happy told him to get in the car.
It was the Iron Spider was there, but I was like, you can't have that. You can't do the Iron Spider without him old enough to at least be seriously dating Mary Jane, like an adult relationship, without Aunt May knowing. And obviously, he's 15. That's not Iron Spider time. And the fact that May found out at the very end was so awesome. I was like, okay, now we can move towards where I want you to go. That's gorgeous.
You know, you just kind of touched on something else that kind of stood out to me. How about them really burying the lead with MJ there?
Yeah, that was kind of interesting. I did not expect that, but I liked it.
I expected, like, because obviously they're setting up for an interest switch for him, you know, to shift to her eventually. At least that would be the presumption, you know? Mm-hmm. And I found it really interesting that, like, that didn't happen in this film. He was, which I actually appreciated. I have a lot of respect for the fact that he had his eyes on the one girl, gets to go to prom with the girl, or the formal, or whatever it's called, and, you know, things don't work out, or whatever, but, like, he's not just like, oh, well, hey, somebody else is paying attention to me, you know what I mean? Even though she's clearly been paying attention to him this whole time.
I like that they didn't force a kiss between those two.
I like they didn't force anything in this film.
Yeah, nothing felt forced. Well, they had said in one of the interviews that they had filmed several attempts at, like, them having a kiss scene. So,
now,
like,
you're talking about the love interest or Mary Jane?
Okay. The love interest. And she's not Mary Jane. Feige has said outright she is
MJ,
not Mary Jane.
MJ, right? She's, what do they call her, Michelle?
Michelle.
But they had filmed several iterations of Liz Allen and Peter kissing, and none of them felt right. None of them really worked, and they felt really forced, so they just left it out.
Good. That was smart.
And I'm really proud of them for that, as, like, you know, like, good job being a filmmaker and not forcing it. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, is there... Chris, I'm going to go to you because I'm going to get a quick no, I believe. Is there anything you hated in the film?
The incorrect count of Legos in the Lego Death Star.
Now, here's the thing. That actual toy was provided by Lucasfilm for the... Because I say through all the credits, I read some of them. That was provided. You would think on the box, it has the number. Are you sure... That wasn't the right one.
Are you really? Are you really questioning me right now? I just said, you think I won't go grab my box out of my garage?
No.
You think I won't grab it?
No.
Oh, you said garage. I thought you were going to be like out of my room.
I can't. The kid will pull it down.
Do you want me just to reach under my desk and grab my box? It's right. I'm always building it.
I've got it right here. It's always in arm's reach.
It's just... odd that you would actually have the physical thing and not just easily ad-lib change the line to the actual number instead of what they said.
You see where I'm coming from now, right?
A little bit.
Chris?
I'm glad we agree.
Chris?
Yeah.
Why does your Death Star have a suspicious hole where the satellite dish space should be?
Oh, that's not suspicious. That's well used.
You really do love Star Wars.
I do.
Now, that's why there's more pieces in your set.
Chris got the pre-order deluxe idiot set and had to pay for extra pieces. All right, Klotz. I mean, do you have any other scene of the net, Chris? I know you're actually kind of serious about it, but do you have anything else?
No. There's nothing. I couldn't find anything to hate in that movie.
Klotz, you got anything? Well, okay, I'll rephrase. Klotz, you have anything you disliked? Something that didn't work for you?
Oh, well, if you're saying that, then I did have something that didn't work for me.
So
Peter Parker in this whole movie is predicated on he's going to do everything he can to save as many people as he can, right? It's, at the end, like, he goes and pulls Vulture out of the fire, right?
Yeah.
But the dude totally watches a jet engine just fall into a populated area behind him. He's like, well, that one's gone.
What can he do? He's barely holding on. I thought the physics on the plane were really well done.
No, you're right. I just, like, even a shot with a web. Like, make the attempt. I get it that thing was destined to go. Give me the attempt. Something. Yeah. Something to stay in character at that point.
I didn't like the camera shots at that battle scene because there was a good 30 seconds. I didn't know what the hell was going on. It just kept shooting back and forth. And I saw sparks, and that was it. I didn't know what they were doing on the plane. But that's a very, very short-lived scene that just was off for me. Klotz, now for you.
I think maybe the only thing that I didn't like, MJ, I was just kind of like whatever with. Like, there was so much kerfuffle. Like, we even talked
right.
about it on the show
right.
about her casting and everything, and then she's barely in the movie. She's like just a source of a couple one-liners and obviously a setup for the future film. And I'm just kind of like, I don't know that her presence was necessary. I don't know that she added anything to the film.
I'm not sure. With her not being Mary Jane, I'm not sure why she's there. She was a cool little transitional character, right? Every time they'd show up for something, she would be there, and they'd say something to her. They'd call it out, like at the party. Like, I can't believe you losers came to the party. Like, Ned,
but you're here.
Am I? And then it took you away from what just happened into what's just about to happen, I think.
That's kind of what I mean. It's like they kept setting something up that never paid off. You know what I mean?
No, she was there. Zendaya was in it to draw the Disney Channel crowd.
Which is one of the things I've criticized in the past is I don't like it when they do stuff like that because I don't think it was necessary. I'm not saying that she did a bad job in her role. I mean, like, she was fine. She was funny. I found her likable, and she was amusing, and I just don't feel that her presence was necessary, you know what I mean, in the film. Like, a lot of those one-liners could have been said by, a passing side character that didn't matter at all.
Mm-hmm.
But they highlighted her so much that she's clearly supposed to matter, there's just no justification for it.
And then
yet.
She throws down the MJ, clearly after they say Michelle, which is not Mary Jane's name.
Yes,
I don't know.
Right.
You
keep saying that, but like we get that.
No, I know. Well, that's what bothers me. It's like, well, are they going to change Michelle? Is she? Not, why would you use the MJ thing? Why are you doing this foreshadowing?
Do you know what her middle name is?
No, but you, Chris, you just said, you just said.
Do you
said that she's not Mary Jane?
Right.
Yeah. He said in an interview that he like. They were just like, oh, we're so clever. She has an M. And wouldn't it be funny if her middle name was something with a J and we could just call her MJ? And then, like, it got really out of hand with people being like, oh my God, she's Mary Jane. They're like, no, she's not, though. But she's not. Right.
Even if this was the old days, right, where you don't get any of the leaked info, you don't get much of the interviews, you just show up to watch the movie. You're at the end of the film and she drops, my friends call me MJ. Excuse me, what? I mean, if they go that route, that's fine. I don't mind them retconning it a little bit. But I think she'd be okay. I think she'd be better MJ than we've seen so far, to be honest.
I think I'm okay with her being just an Easter egg. You know, that MJ thing was just an Easter egg. I'm okay with that because then my problem with it is what they're going to do to turn her into the love interest is there's going to be some taming of the shrew, hair down, getting ready for the prom transformation from John Bender to Mary Jane Watson, and that will bug that. At that point, you will lose me with that character.
What, you don't want to? She's all that.
I don't need that. Yeah,
with her.
I don't need that. But that would get Charles 10 Things I Hate About You vibe.
Hey, if that's what brings Heath Ledger back from the dead, I'm okay with it. Because I still miss him. MCU guy, what do you got? Jeff, what do you
got? Wow. No, I'm not. I'm,
that's all right. You don't listen to the show. You won't hear it.
Anything I disliked? No, not really. There's nothing that I disliked about this movie at all.
Fair enough. I've talked about the stuff that didn't work for me. I think overall, I thought it was great. The Iron Man interactions weren't just fluff. It was really good. And that whole him kind of being a pseudo father, giving him that harsh talk, this is where you zip it. As a dad, I'm like, I totally am identifying with Tony Stark right now. This is the only character I can identify with right now in this film, Tony Stark. Yelling at
you can't
kid.
Identify with Cap?
Oh.
With all those dadisms?
No,
come on.
No, man. The Cap stuff was...
So your body's changing. I know a thing or two about that.
Probably don't get called out enough. The Cap moments were so Cap.
Yes.
Dadism. And
yeah.
It was perfect.
Yeah, they were. I love that they used a suit from the first Avengers movie.
Did you catch the first time you see Cap doing that? Is the fitness challenge and the coach is standing on the wrong side of the TV?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh my god.
Oh yeah. By the way,
and he just kind of waves like Hannibal Buress sitting there, yeah. Like, hey, I'm over here.
Yeah, Hannibal Buress is one of my favorite parts, just because he's so low key, but like.
Yeah, I love that he's just like, well, this guy's probably a war criminal now, but you know, I have to show you this, so it's whatever.
Yeah, the Breakfast Club moment. Hey, come back. Where are you going?
Yeah, him and Donald Glover nailed his bit, too.
Oh, God, yes. No, come back and fix this. Man, I got ice cream in here.
No, you're a bad guy. You just, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you deserve it. You deserve this. Oh, God. Yeah. You got to get better at this part of the job, man.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, you've never done this before. I heard you. I know a girl when I hear one. I'm a man.
Not a girl. I'm a boy. I'm a man.
There's so much great stuff. The Cap stuff absolutely was great. Now, I need you uber geeks. Other than you've talked about the characters, right? You've talked about the names being the uncle and being Scorpion. What other Easter eggs did the casual filmgoers miss?
Oh, when Aaron Davis, when they were doing the deal, when he was like, you know, I need something to, you know, I need something to stick people up with. I don't need a gun that'll like shoot them back in time. They said that they have an anti-gravity climbing rig, and he was like, anti-gravity? And that is straight up his villain character in Spider-Man comics, where he is the Prowler.
Ah, nice.
He has that rig to help him climb buildings, like scale buildings, so that he can break into higher level stuff.
That's cool. What else? What else did we miss?
I don't know that. Well, we haven't talked about it, but I don't know that anybody that saw the movie missed it. When Vulture's doing his surveillance on Stark Tower before the plane flies off, and he's got his total Batman pose on.
Oh yeah, where he's silhouetted against the moon.
Yep. Well, no, before when he's at the building, when he's hanging out on side. Or yeah. No, you're right. Yeah. And then even that, just the costuming in that, man. When he is that Ultimate Villain? Not Ultimate Vulture. There's been another version of that Vulture in the comics or something similar. But, man, every time he came in and out of that rig, all I could think was Evil Hal Jordan.
Right, I got you. I love how the rig worked. It was very comic book science plausible, right, and how that was supposed to happen.
Yeah, it was mostly the Ultimates universe that tried to make the characters more grounded and more realistic like that. And the way that they pulled this suit off with the, you know, the wings have, like, they're not just wings. He doesn't flap them. They're, you know, there are jets and fans and propulsion
and
mechanisms. Yeah. And like, there's all these things that you can do with the wings. It's like, they're not just wings. Like, that's awesome. That's so great.
Yeah. That was so good. Happy. I loved Happy being in the film. I've missed Happy. Mm-hmm.
Hey, how about surprise Pepper Potts?
Pepper Potts, right. Answering a years-old question. Yeah.
Which was?
Where's Pepper?
I didn't think we cared.
She's been in that room the entire time.
I did like in the comics where she actually marries Happy, and I was hoping after that whole last Iron Man where she was just going to out that perhaps that would be the end of their romantic relationship and that she would end up being with Happy, but apparently that is not the path that they're going to go on.
I think that she's probably more apt to be with Tony now that he's regulated by, like, world law.
Yeah, it works. It worked. I'm not saying it didn't work. It was a surprise to see her, but it's fun. Mm-hmm. All right, Stinger. Stinger number one, of course, we referenced a little bit already, where Vulture's in prison. And so that's the Scorpion that he's talking to.
Yes.
Yep, that is Matt Gargan.
All right. So that was something I didn't know. And Aaron asked me, my wife asked me after, it's like, I know that's supposed to be somebody who is. I was like, I don't know. I'm not that deep cut on Spider-Man. I haven't watched my Spider-Man and Friends show this week, so I don't know. But obviously, you can tell it's somebody. I hope they do something well with it. God, again, guys, bad guys that they could keep using. And they're greatly done. They were so, all the bad guys were so well done. Nobody was over the top cheesy. It was just good.
Yeah, Michael Keaton kind of, like, he barely nibbled on some of the scenery. Yeah. Just enough. Just enough to make it good.
And then, of course, I do, Chris. I thought of you instantly when I waited through the entire credits. And we get that blinding... we get the blinding bright screen in her face. And it's Cap doing one last PSA for the moviegoers. And it's all about patience.
That was exceptional.
I laughed so hard. I laughed so hard.
That may be the best stinger that has ever happened.
Yeah, and sometimes you get to the end and you go, why did I wait on this crap? There's nothing here. And you think, how many more of these do I have to do?
And you know, there are going to be more of those Cap PSAs on the DVD release.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I hope there's more of those Cap PSAs in every freaking movie going forward, to be honest. If they can work it in, okay. You know, because it's a part of that universe, and it was so funny. It was really cool.
I think if it's a reoccurring thing in the Spider-Man movies, that'll be great. I don't know that I want to see it, like, tacked onto everything, but yeah, definitely.
Fair enough.
Because he's the one that would encounter them, you know, because he's the high school or college-age kid, you know, depending on where they go, you know, throughout the future of this. But, you know, one of the other things to call out is there's been a lot of articles coming out where Feige has said basically that the Spider-Man sequel kind of hails in the forthcoming Spider-Man sequel will hail in the new era of MCU stuff. So that the Infinity War is going to be the capstone to everything that's happened so far. We've reported on that a bit in the past, but like, it's really exciting to see that they're building Holland Spider-Man up as being a pretty key element of where we go in the future after we close this book. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
well said. I'm very much looking forward to all of it. Ragnarok is next, and that's got me ready to go. Very excited.
Oh, you're not worried about those reshoots?
Okay, you want to bring our business to the streets? We'll take it to the streets.
You want to step outside, sir?
I was never worried about the reshoots. I was punching my friend Jeff Randall in the face because he went public about some DC reshoots a while back, and it got my goat.
It was because there are significant reshoots. When they say there are significant reshoots, I get a little worried.
All I hear is waka, 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 waka. It's all.
Oh, yeah, me too, because, you know, it's Marvel being Pac-Man on the movie money and gobbling it all up. And DC's like, oh, man, I wish I could get a cherry.
All right, let's bring it back to Spider-Man. Any last thoughts on this film, guys?
I'm really excited to see where Peter Parker goes, especially the way that Feige tells it is that Peter Parker... He said specifically Peter Parker, not Spider-Man, but Peter Parker is going through a 5-movie arc. He listed starting in Civil War, Homecoming, the 2 Avengers movies, Infinity War and the 4th one, and then Spider-Man 2, like Homecoming 2 or whatever, like a 5-movie arc for him in those. And Tom Holland has said that the Spider-Man Homecoming is the beginning of a trilogy, of Spider-Man movies. So I think that they could pull out the Miles Morales thing within a few movies. Yeah.
That'd be cool.
That'd be cool.
Honestly, I would love to see them do like Spider-Verse type stuff, like not maybe directly from like what's out of the comics, but the idea of having
kind of like
Iron Man when what is it, the second or third film when you know he the party's all here, you know, he calls every suit out and you're like, man, it is so cool to see like every iteration of his suit thus far all at once. I would like to see them go in a direction where they can have multiple spider heroes and spider foes, you know what I mean, all in the same kind of stuff. You know, that would be really fun.
Yeah.
So,
you know, if they brought in the Fantastic Four the way that Matt and I have been talking about them bringing them in, like alternate universe kind of stuff, then that would easily open the door to the Spider-Verse.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Yeah.
I was pretty sure they were going to have to bring them in with a hearse. That shit's dead, yo.
I can say legit that I have true hopes that when they do Rhino, they'll do Rhino well, because I will not let that go from the Electro was butchered, and so and Rhino is not a suit. Ugh. Anyway, I'm sorry. How about Tyne Daly? Tyne Daly being a fixture now in the MCU as the head of damage control, it was cool. You apparently didn't care, but I thought it was cool.
No, yeah, that's great.
I'm sorry. Did none of you grow up with Cagney and Lacey?
Cagney and Lacey, yeah. We got you.
We get it, Charles. You're old.
Yeah. My parents made me watch TV with them, too. I got it.
Assholes. All right. Well, Jeff, tell us about Issue Cast and where we can find it every week.
We are the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast, a proud member of the Giant Size Team Up Network. We can be found on Facebook at facebook.com/MCUcast, at MCUcast on Twitter. You can email us at MCUcast@gmail.com. Call and leave a voicemail. No, I'm not going to do the whole thing. We generally record every week with some sort of Marvel Cinematic Universe related content. For our Patreon subscribers here lately, we're starting a commissioned episode. And, you know, a lot of people are doing the right thing and keeping it, you know, local to our content, really wanting us to deep dive on some of the MCU stuff rather than just being like, tell me about Battlefield Earth or whatever, you know. They're not doing that kind of dumb thing. But, so we're gonna be covering that here soon. Also coming up is next month we've got The Defenders coming out, which is gonna be the start of a really busy fall for us, because we got Defenders coming out in August. We have The Inhumans coming out in September. Right after that in November is gonna be Thor Ragnarok and likely the Punisher Netflix series, and then Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, after the amazing fourth season they had, they're coming back in January, and they're not taking any breaks until the end of the season. 22 episodes. And then in February, Black Panther. Like, it's a really big year coming up.
As it is. It is a great time to be in comics and to be in podcasting. You can find us every week here. That's Paul Klotz, Chris Wisdom, and myself. On Breaking the Panel, you can email us, btp@giantsizeteamup.com, and Facebook is Breaking the Panel, Twitter is @panelbreakers, and a bunch of cool stuff coming up for us as well. I know Chris has already been posting stories about fake NES classics, and I know we're going to be talking excitedly about Squirrel Girl coming up in some upcoming TV developments.
Very excitedly.
Tune in next week to hear Chris say,
"Want
to
borrow my Death Star box?"
No.
And cut.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizeteamup.com.